Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries daily worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on separation of church and state right after this. You know, those who already walk submissively will say that there's no cause for alarm. But submissiveness is not our heritage. The First Amendment was designed to allow rebellion to remain as our heritage. The Constitution was designed to keep government off the backs of the people, and the Bill of Rights was added to keep the precincts of belief and expression of the press, of political and social activities, free from government surveillance. Well, you know, I wish I'd have thought of that, but that quotation comes from Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas. Now, our princes, our politicians beller in the halls of Congress for more taxes, more spending, and more gun control. And we haven't heard anything intelligent come out of a politician's mouth in more than 75 years. That's why I contend that the only real reason, logic, or common sense left in America comes from our courts. It doesn't come from our political process. It certainly doesn't come from our politicians, our lawyers, or our bureaucrats. I thought old Mayor Rothschild summed it up with a flair when he said, "You give me the money power, and I care not who makes the laws." Well, I'd like to echo that by saying, "You give me the judicial power, and I care not who makes the laws either," because the real power in America today is in our courts. It's not in our politics. Now, if you'd like to tap into this power of the courts, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. While you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school, and it's entertaining, educational, informative, and free. Now, our school courtroom strategy and procedure is available on compact disc for adult home education. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click on to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there, georgegordon.org. All right, we're talking about separation of church and state. And so on the first program here in the series, I said, I believe that Thomas Jefferson's intention, when he made the statement, separation, build a wall of separation between church and state, was his intention to wall off, to keep the government out of the church, not to keep the church out of the government. So in the last program, I said, now, you know, a vague and ambiguous statement was made by God to Adam and Eve, wherein he said, in the day that you eat off that tree, you're going to surely die. And Satan came along a few days later, and he said, no, that's not true. In the day that you eat off that tree, you will not surely die. Well, Adam and Eve ate off that tree, and they did not die on that day, June 18th. But they did die at a later date, about 930 years later. Now, God did not whistle Dixie through a straw hat when he told them, now, the day you eat off that tree, you're going to die. Satan deceived them, but he didn't lie to them. He deceived them by telling them the truth. Now, oftentimes, when you go into court, you will have lawyers come in and deceive by citing a court case off point and out of context. It's done all the time. And from his point of view, hell, my job is to win, you know. If the judge misconstrues my statement, you know, that's his fault, not mine. Take it to appeal. Now, that's what we're dealing with here. Thomas Jefferson made a statement. I said in the last program, I said, let's suppose that Jefferson intended to separate church and state. Well, he was one of the founding fathers, but he was only one of 56. What did the other 55 guys think about the Bible, the Ten Commandments, God, and prayer? Did they, too, think that we should separate our children in school from the Ten Commandments? Did they think that we should separate school, children, and young people from prayer and God and the Bible? I don't believe that for a minute. And I think the ACLU is using deception. They're not lying. They cited Thomas Jefferson and they said, hey, he advocated separation of church and state. And then they add one more to that. They go, and our founding fathers believed in separation of church and state. And you know, I think that's true. And I think they intended to separate the state out of the church's business. And that's exactly what the state has done. It has inserted itself into the church's business. And out of 330,000 churches in this country, 324,000 of them are not free to say what they want to say about government. They have to get permission from government to say it. As I pointed out, Pete Peters wanted to talk about homosexuality and found out he couldn't do that. Now, he can't do that because he was an incorporated church. I don't know if he still is or not. I presume he woke up to reality and unincorporated, but I don't know that positively. I do know this. There are 6,000 churches in this country that are independent, and they can preach and teach what they want to, and that's what Thomas Jefferson was advocating. Now, in England, those churches over there, they don't preach and teach anything other than the straight government line. And in this country, our churches do not preach and teach anything outside of the straight government line. And they get the straight government line from the IRS, or from the Department of Homeland Security, or from some other government institution or agency. But by God, they aren't going to say what they want to say to who they want to say it to at any damn time they want to. Now put that out of your head. It ain't going to happen in the United States of America. Well, not for 324,000 of those churches. It isn't. And you Mormons learned that in 1880, didn't you, over that polygamy issue? By God, the government's going to tell you what you're going to practice in your church. Now get that through your head, Mormon. Now, I don't think Thomas Jefferson intended for that to happen. That is, in fact, what happened, but I don't think that that's what our founding fathers intended when they wrote up the First Amendment to our Constitution. And I wanted to point that out in this book, which is actually a legal brief. And he starts off, this guy's name is William J. Federer, and he starts off by saying, Matthew D. Staver is the founder of the Liberty Council in Orlando, Florida. It's a nonprofit legal organization which defends First Amendment cases across America. Well, in February of 2001, he asked me to serve as an expert witness in several United States District Court cases regarding a prepared list of historical documents which influenced America's founding, approved to be used in public venues. This list included colonial documents, the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the Ten Commandments. Now, the ACLU objected to the Ten Commandments being included in that list. Matthew Staver began preparations to take these cases to the Supreme Court if necessary. This book that you're reading contains the expert witness testimony that I prepared as a primary exhibit, along with legal commentary by Matthew D. Staver. Admittedly, this book is a collection of evidence rather than a typical book for reading. This information was also provided to the attorneys for Grand Junction, Colorado, who were successful in defending a similar monument. Now, this information is presented not as a public policy recommendation, but rather as a documentation that the historical record is replete with evidence that the Ten Commandments have directly and indirectly influenced America's founders, America's leaders, and created a system of government and a legal code, and therefore deserve to be included among the publicly acknowledged historical documents which have impacted the founding of America. Some cases, for instance, in Lexington, Kentucky, handling the ACLU a significant defeat. I said handling again. It's handing, H-A-N-D-I-N-G, handing the ACLU a significant defeat. Federal District Court Judge Carl Forrester in the Eastern District of Kentucky held on Wednesday that a display of the Ten Commandments, together with other historical documents in Mercer County, Kentucky, is constitutional. Mercer County is represented jointly by Liberty Council and the American Center for Law and Justice. Now, the ACLU sued Mercer County for its display in the county courthouse that contained the Ten Commandments. This display included the Ten Commandments, the Mayflower Compact, the Declaration of Independence, the Magna Carta, the Star-Spangled Banner, the National Motto, the Preamble to the Kentucky Constitution, the Bill of Rights to the United States Constitution, and a picture of Lady Justice. Named the Foundations of American Law and Government, the display is intended to depict several documents that have played a significant role in the founding of our system of law and government. Judge Forrester had previously denied the ACLU's request for an injunction against that display. In a previous opinion denying the request for an injunction, Judge Forrester stated, for good or bad, right or wrong, the Ten Commandments did have an influence upon the development of United States law, and it can be constitutional to display the Ten Commandments in the appropriate context, unquote. Judge Forrester's decision Wednesday that ended the ACLU's challenge against Mercer County recognized that the display clearly has a legitimate secular purpose of, including but not limited to, acknowledging the historical influence of the Ten Commandments on the development of this country's laws, and this record is devoid of any evidence indicating a religious purpose by the government. Based on this, Judge Forrester granted the county's motion for summary judgment and issued a final judgment holding the display to be constitutional. Matt Staver hailed today's decision as a great victory, and Staver stated that today's decision begins to turn the tide against the ACLU, which has been on a search and destroy mission to remove all vestiges of our religious history from public view. Staver added, Whether the ACLU likes it or not, history is crystal clear that each one of the Ten Commandments has played an important role in the founding of our system of law and government. Each one of the Ten Commandments was adopted as law by 12 of the 13 original American colonies. All right, I want to underline that for you, boys and girls, because that's a pretty important statement. In each one of our original 13 colonies, each one of those colonies adopted the Ten Commandments, except one. One state only adopted 6 of the Ten Commandments. All of the others adopted all 10 of the Ten Commandments. Now, I've forgotten which state or which colony it was. I think it was Maryland that adopted 6 of the 10. I could be wrong about that. It's here in the book somewhere, but I can't just put my finger right on it. Staver also added, as long as a governmental entity displays the Ten Commandments together with other historical documents and does so for an educational or historical purpose, such displays will be constitutional. This case should be used as a model for other counties wishing to display historical documents, including the Ten Commandments. These displays are constitutional. And on October the 11th, 2002, a federal judge says the Texas Capitol exhibit is constitutional, cited from WorldNet Daily. A federal judge in Austin, Texas, has ruled that a 42-year-old display of the Ten Commandments on the grounds of the state capitol building is not an official endorsement of religion and can remain intact. U.S. District Judge Harry Lee Hudspeth found that the 6-feet-by-3-feet granite memorial, one of 17 monuments on state capitol grounds, was appropriate as a tool to promote youth morality and to stop the alarming increase in delinquency and served a legitimate secular purpose. The court also found that no reasonable observer would conclude that the state sought to advance or to endorse religion. The Ten Commandments display did not contain the state seal or the Lone Star symbol as other monuments do. The court was clear in noting that the display of the monument could not be interpreted by a reasonable observer as a state endorsement of religion, said Matthew Staver, the President and General Counsel of Liberty Counsel, a nonprofit legal group that defends religious freedom cases. Each of the Ten Commandments has played a significant role in the foundation of our system of law and government, he said, adding that the biblical edicts have both a secular and a religious aspect. Now, boys and girls, let me point out that here there is a list in the introduction here on page 7 of probably 25 of these law firms that specialize in defending religious free exercise cases. So let's suppose for the sake of our discussion here that you're homeschooling your children and the state of Pennsylvania jumps on your back and they want to raise hell with you. And then you need to hire a lawyer to go defend. Well, now, there's about 25 of these law firms in the country. And they're mentioned here in the introduction. I deliberately left them out. I don't want to go through those organizations, but I'll give you a couple, three examples. Christian Law Association is one. Christian Legal Society is two. And American Center for Law and Justice would be three. And there's probably 25 or 30 more. And you may need someday a law firm that can specialize in or can help you with it. Now, here's another little segment for you. Let's suppose that you want to practice the Ten Commandments or the Bible, let's say in your home school. And or you may want to exclude your children, a son or a daughter, from say sex education or evolution classes or something in your public school. You can do all of that. But it's important that you know how. Here at the law school, we take time to explain to you what the law is and how it works and why it works that way. And here's where the lines are drawn in the sand. Here's how far you can go and you can't go any further. Now I'll give you an illustration. See all you Mormons out there. Any of you Mormons that want to practice polygamy can practice polygamy all day long. There's no law against polygamy in this country. Never has been. The law is against you Mormons going out there and getting a marriage license with 2 or 3 separate women. You can't do that. You can have 3 wives, but you can't have 3 marriage licenses. That's all. Now, there's 3 ways to marry. You can have a patriarchal marriage, a common law marriage, or a civil law marriage. And all you Mormons out there can think of is civil law marriage. Why don't you open up your minds and start thinking about patriarchal marriage, because Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob did not have a civil law marriage license. You know, the Bible does not condone civil law marriages. As a matter of fact, we were told with specificity in Leviticus 18, verses 3 through 5, not to practice the law of the state. Now, you know, if you want to practice the law of the state, that's fine. You can do that. But by God, if you do, then you better obey all the laws of the state or you're going to jail. Now, if you want to practice the law of God, then obviate the law of the state, and then you can have 2 or 5 or 9 wives. But if you're going to practice the law of the state, then you better stick with one. Now, this is not an endorsement of polygamy. For all the rest of you Christians out there, I'm not here to endorse polygamy, and I don't practice it. And the Bible does not advocate polygamy. It permits it, but it does not advocate it. It's a very rare event. It's kind of like a Nazarite vow. The Bible does not promote Nazarite vows, but it does permit them. And if for some reason, like Samson, you wanted to perform a Nazarite vow, you can do that. And then there's directions and laws and rules and regulations for accomplishing that goal. And now, I'm an old man and I've never done one. And if I live to be 120, I hope I never do a Nazarite vow. And I'm an old man and I'm not practicing polygamy, and I hope I don't. But I'm here to tell you that God Almighty himself wrote the laws, and if you want to practice polygamy, that's not illegal. But it's illegal under the civil law. So tuck it away in your heart. It's illegal for you to do a lot of things that are permitted in the Bible. And so therefore, you're going to have to practice the biblical law if you want to do those things. So now, if you need some help, there is a whole host and plethora of legal organizations here in the United States, and I would submit probably around the world, in your country someplace, that can help you if you want to practice the Ten Commandment model. Now, let me flip over here to some cases that have been decided. In his commentary, The Ten Commandments in American Law and Government, Matthew D. Staver writes, when a government or governmental practice has been deeply embedded in the history and tradition of this country, such a practice will not violate the Establishment Clause because the practice has become part of the fabric of our society. See Marsh versus Chambers at 463 U.S. 783, fairly recent case, 1983. Now, the Ten Commandments played a significant role in the development of American law. The incorporation of the Ten Commandments in law and policy predates the Constitution. This intermingling of the Ten Commandments into American law and government was long before the appearance of legislative prayers. The drafters of the First Amendment would never have dreamed that they were abolishing the Decalogue. From time out of mind, courts, legislatures, and our founding fathers have referred to the Ten Commandments and their impact on our culture and upon our legal system. The Supreme Court has often recognized the impact the Ten Commandments has played on our system of law and government. See Griswold versus Connecticut, 381 U.S. 479, 1965. Now, in McGowan versus Maryland, cited at 366 U.S. 420, innumerable civil regulations enforce conduct which harmonizes with religious canons. State prohibitions of murder, theft, and adultery reinforce commands of the Decalogue. In Stone versus Graham, 449 U.S. 39, 1980, it is equally undeniable that the Ten Commandments have had a significant impact on the development of secular legal codes in the Western world, unquote. In Lynch versus Donnelly, 465 U.S. 668, in describing the depiction of Moses with the Ten Commandments on the wall of the Supreme Court chamber and stating that such acknowledgments of religion demonstrate that our history is pervaded by expressions of religious beliefs. So in the chambers of the Supreme Court of the United States, there is a mural on the wall carved on it of Moses with the Ten Commandments. Boys and girls, it was never the intention of our political leaders at the Constitutional Convention or those men who signed the Declaration of Independence to exclude morality, the Ten Commandments, God, prayer, or the Bible from our secular institutions. It was their intention to exclude government out of the church. It was their intention to make sure that government never got into the business of religion. But it was never their intention to exclude religion from our way of life, from our customs, and from our political institutions. Now, it's true we've done that. I don't deny it. And there is coming an outcome for that. And boys and girls, we're fools if we deny that. And I'm going to point out to you from God himself. Now, you know, he had a little something to say about this. He said, hey, boys and girls, let me give you an instruction here. Just like he did Adam and Eve, he gave us some instruction also. And I'll cover that here in a little bit. In Edwards versus Aguillard, 482 U.S. 578, acknowledging that the Ten Commandments did not play an exclusively religious role in the history of Western civilization. The Ten Commandments have been repeatedly used by government from the conception of America. Each of the Ten Commandments has played some significant role in the foundation of our system of law and government. 12 of the 13 original colonies adopted the entire Decalogue into their civil and criminal laws. Joseph Story, the eminent Supreme Court justice, who was the youngest justice ever appointed, and who served on the Supreme Court for 34 years from 1811 to 1845, remarked, Quote, now, there will probably be found few persons in this or any other Christian country. Let me underline that. Here's Justice Story says that America is a Christian country. I know that that just grates on people, but I just want to point that out. Here's a chief, well, he wasn't the Chief Justice, but he was a justice on the Supreme Court for 34 years. He did not know that America was a humanist country. He thought it was a Christian country. Who would deliberately contend that it was unreasonable or unjust to foster and encourage the Christian religion generally as a matter of sound policy, as well as of revealed truth. In fact, every American colony from its foundation down to the Revolution, with the exception of Rhode Island, if indeed that state be an exception, did openly, by the whole course of its laws and institutions, support and sustain in some form the Christian religion, and almost invariably gave a peculiar sanction to some of its fundamental doctrines. And this has continued to be the case in some of the states down to the present period, without the slightest suspicion that it was against the principles of public law or Republican liberty. God, that's a powerful statement here, boys and girls. This is a Justice Story. And it's pointing out that America is a Christian nation, and the states in this union up to this moment in time have accepted it as such. Now, it isn't anymore. And if you were to say that America is a Christian nation today, I'd say, well, you're out of touch with reality. Hell, even the churches themselves don't promote Christianity. They have adopted Mithraism and all of the isms and the pagan doctrines and ideologies of the foreigners and aliens around us over the last 3,000 or 4,000 years. Hell, we've adopted it all, now brought it in here with open immigration. But I just wanted to point out, it wasn't always that way, wasn't intended that way. It has indeed evolved into this pagan secular nation, for which, by the way, there's going to be an outcome. Now, Joseph Story wrote a series of books. And this is three commentaries on the Constitution of the United States, 1867, 1833. Rhode Island adopted the last six of the commandments, but not the first four. See Alvin W. Johnson Sunday legislation. Now, I made a mistake. I thought it was Maryland. Nope, it was Rhode Island. Now, when your legislature adopts into its laws or its Constitution the Ten Commandments, that's getting to be pretty serious, isn't it? Those men back in colonial times, those people, our founding fathers that wrote our Constitution, wrote our Declaration of Independence, Articles of Confederation, the Declaration of Association, they did not intend to lock God, prayer, the Ten Commandments in the Bible, out of our secular institutions. They did intend to lock the government out of the church. Now, that they did intend to do. And I think that that's what Thomas Jefferson was referring to, because that's what all the rest of these founding fathers were alluding to and practiced. And I emphasize, and practiced. I mean, for crying out loud, how much more secular can you get in adopting the Ten Commandments and putting it into your state constitution? Doesn't sound like separation of church and state to me. Does it to you? Hey, I got to give you a reminder here at the halfway point that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package, so be sure to order one by calling and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to endorse or recommend the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we're citing here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program well, they're mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. But they should. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, again, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, just read you a little story here about Joseph Story. Now, he wrote three commentaries on the Constitution of the United States, well worth reading. Justice Blackstone also wrote two volumes concerning law. And I'll tell you what turned me on to this Ten Commandment model as a matter of law here in the United States. A student came in one day to my office, and he said, we need to be getting into the common law. And I said, well, Ted, what is this common law that you're talking about? And he didn't know. And I said, well, then what makes you think we should be getting into the common law? You don't even know what the hell it is. And I said, Ted, you need to bring in a 5-gallon bucket of common law, set it up here on my desk so that we can get into it up to our elbows and squish it through our fingers and, you know, use it in some way. So he left. The next time I had a meeting with Ben Rice, I said, hey, Ben, tell me about the common law. I've heard a little about that. How does that impact upon American law? Now, Ben Rice now was a Mormon lawyer, old country lawyer from Cuna, Idaho. And he said, you know, I really don't know much about that either. We don't use it in our system of law and justice here in the country anymore, but we used to. And we've changed now over the years, and there are still some vestiges of it that we run across once in a while. But it's very rare, very rare. But what you need is Blackstone's commentaries. If you were to pick up Blackstone's commentaries, I think he'd probably tell you about it. So I wrote it down in my notes and went about my business, and one day I happened to be down to the law library in Boise. And I asked the law librarian, I said, could you point me to Blackstone's commentaries? And she said, right this way. Two volumes, and I took them both, went into a little reading room. I sat down, I picked up volume one, and I just flipped it open, and started reading right there. And it was concerning land law. And Blackstone cited from the book of Leviticus or Numbers, probably Numbers, on how to claim land. And then cited how the English did that when they came over here to the New World and had land claims and how the sovereign owns the land and blah, blah, blah. And I thought, what in the hell is this? We've got this judge over here citing the Bible. What's this all about? Now, until 1942, boys and girls, here in the United States, an incoming freshman coming into the law school at Harvard, as they say back east, Harvard, started with Blackstone's commentaries and the book of Hebrews, written by Paul the Apostle in the Bible, New Testament, by the way. And up through 1947, students in the Dallas public schools in Texas were taken into a class and taught the book of John. That's the Gospel of John in the Texas public schools as recently as 1947. Now, God help you if you did that today. But I just wanted to point out that here in America, we were not always ashamed of our God, prayer, the Ten Commandments in the Bible. It hasn't always been that way. It certainly is today, but, you know, we did have a rich, long history of practicing the Ten Commandments. And, by the way, when we did, we became the wealthiest, most powerful, prosperous nation on planet Earth, far bigger, more powerful, and more prosperous than the Roman Empire. Now, take a look at us, in debt up to our eyeballs, bankrupt, and a tottering world empire. But you can't blame that on the Ten Commandments, the Bible, prayer, or God, because we've kicked them out. But up until the time when we kicked out God, prayer, the Ten Commandments, and the Bible, we were doing pretty well. Doing pretty well. So let me give you a couple of illustrations as to why we're having some problems here. We pick up the Bible and God. This is the Creator now. This is not the God of the Christians. And so if you're a Christian out there, you can turn this off because we're not talking about your God here. This is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And this is the God of Moses, Isaiah, Jeremiah, and Ezekiel. And most of you Christians out there, you do in fact have a copy of this Bible, more than likely. But it's not something that you practice. It's not something that you live by, as is evidenced by. So if you got a pen and paper, start writing some of these scriptures down, because God, when he was talking to Moses in Deuteronomy chapter 4, he gave Moses some instructions to pass on to us as our representative. Moses was our representative. He represented us to the Creator. At our request, by the way, we said, hey, don't let that God talk to us anymore. It scares the hell out of us. In Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 9, listen to this. He says, only take heed to yourself and keep your soul diligently, lest you forget the things which your eyes have seen, unless they depart from your heart all the days of your life, but teach them thy sons and thy sons' sons. Now, all these things that he's referring to here, including the Ten Commandments and the things that they had seen coming across the Red Sea when the water collapsed on the Egyptians and killed them, and the various battles that they'd had, and one thing and another, he said, teach those to your children. Now, today, I'm happy to report to you in modern America, we have a separation of church and state. And by God, we're not teaching the Bible or any of these historical events to any of our children in those public institutions. We used to. There was a time in America when we did just exactly that, but not anymore. Now, notice he said, now, see that you don't forget this. And that's Deuteronomy 4, verse 9. Now, in this same chapter, 4, verses 23 and 24, he adds a little bit to that. He said, now take heed to yourselves, lest you forget the covenant of the Lord your God, which he made with you, and make you a graven image, like the Washington, what's that big penis that we have sticking up there on the mall? Call that the Washington Monument, or the Statue of Liberty. He says, take heed to yourselves, lest you forget the covenant, that's our contract, which he made with you, and then you make a graven image or the likeness of anything which the Eternal your God has forbidden you. For the Eternal your God is a consuming fire, even a jealous God. See why I told you that this is a different God than you Christians know about? See, your God is kind and gentle, and he just loves everybody, including homosexuals, right? Now, you know that. You learned that last week in church. This guy here is meaner than a junkyard dog, and he doesn't take no for an answer. And then he said that he's a consuming fire and that he's jealous. Just thought I'd pass that on to you. Now, in Deuteronomy 31, verses 28 through 30, there's another little statement made over here. I thought I'd break in right here and complete the thought. Deuteronomy chapter 31, verses 28 through 30, comes right after Deuteronomy 4, verses 29 to 31. He's talking about the same subject matter here. Make sure you don't forget this. Got that? Don't forget. He says, gather unto me all the elders of your tribes and your officers, that I may speak these words in their ears, and call heaven and earth to record this day against them. Verse 29, he says, for I know that after my death, you will totally corrupt yourselves and turn aside from the way which I have commanded you, and evil will befall you in the latter days. Boys and girls, I think we're living in the latter days. In fact, I think we're living in the last generation of the latter days. Now, that's my opinion. And he said, because you will do evil in the sight of the Eternal to provoke him to anger through the works of your hands. And Moses spake in the ears of all the congregation of Israel the words of this song until they were ended. So here in the latter days, Moses told us, he said, now, hey, listen. You guys are going to corrupt yourselves. You are going to throw God, prayer, the Ten Commandments, and the Bible out of your governmental institutions. And when you do that, just like eating off that tree in the midst of the garden, when you do that, there's going to be an outcome. Outcome comes from that. Now, let's go over to Deuteronomy 6, verse 12. Listen to this. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 12. He said, then beware lest you forget the Eternal which brought you forth out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage. Okay, notice this word forget. I looked it up. You got 8 statutes here. So say, don't forget me. Hey, don't you forget this. Hey, don't you forget that. Well, we didn't just forget it. We threw it out. I mean, it's one thing to be careless and forget something. It's something else, again, to stand up on your hind legs and throw it away. Boys and girls, we not only forgot it, we threw it away. It's gone. Now, in chapter 8, there's 3 or 4 scriptures here. Listen to this. Chapter 8, verse 11. He says, beware that you forget not the Eternal your God in not keeping his commandments and his judgments and his statutes, which I command you this day. Hey, you make it a point now not to forget these 10 commandments. Well, there aren't any little boys and girls in public schools that are going to forget the 10 commandments because they ain't going to learn them, period. And you're not going to have any Bibles in your public schools, and you're not going to have any prayers in there by any school teacher saying, God, lead us this day, and let's see if we can learn something from your law. Verse 14 added a little bit more to it, and he said, then your heart be lifted up, and you forget the Eternal your God, which brought you forth out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage. In verses 19 and 20, he said, then it shall be, if you do at all forget the Eternal your God, and you walk after these other gods and serve them and worship them, I testify against you this day, that you shall surely perish. Did you get that? You got to underline that. You know, that's what he told Adam and Eve. He said, in the day that you eat off that tree, you're going to die. Now, he's told us, you Americans, you Canadians, you Australians and New Zealanders out there, in the day, now, when you forget me, I testify against you. This is testimony. This is an adverse witness, boys and girls. And he says, you will surely perish. And so for you Australians down there, I always tell you, look north, look north. Can you see that China up there with 1.3 billion people? Now take a look at your piece of real estate down there, which is just about the same size as their piece of real estate. And you're 25 million people down there. And when those Chinese get down there, they're going to need a lot of houseboys and housegirls. And that's where you're going, houseboys and housegirls. And that's assuming that they leave you alive so that you can work as houseboys and housegirls, which I'm not sure they're going to do. Always remember now, all of you white Anglo-Saxons, the Oriental people have never treated us very well. You take a look at Corregidor and Bataan. You take a look at the Japanese and their dealings with the white prisoners of war in World War II. That's fairly recent. It has always been that way. And I think we'll do better here in the United States falling into the hands of the Russians than falling into the hands of the Chinese. Now, you can take your pick, you know, but verse 20, he goes on to say, he says, as the nations which the Eternal destroyed before your face, so shall you perish, because you would not be obedient unto the voice of the Eternal your God. So now, if you want to know what the penalty is, the nation's going to be destroyed. So you Australians, New Zealanders, take a look at your brothers in South Africa and Rhodesia, and what happened to South Africa and Rhodesia. The white Anglo-Saxons have been destroyed. Past tense. And that's what's coming to Australia, New Zealand, America, and Canada. But not to England. Yep, you Englishmen over there now, you got a ride coming here, a free ride coming. When the Messiah comes back, he's going to take over that throne, Queen Elizabeth's throne. Now, it's not going to be good for you people over there, but you're not going to be destroyed. And I've got that on the highest authority, God himself. You know, it ain't going to happen, you guys. Now, you Frenchmen over there, you Germans, you Swedes and Danes, you Icelanders, wake up and smell the coffee now, you Anglo-Saxons. Now, the English are going to get a little bit better ride than the rest of us. You didn't get a very good ride in World War II. You got your comeuppance back in World War II. There's a little bit more comeuppance for you, but it ain't going to be like our comeuppance is going to be. I mean, we're going to get some comeuppance. And that's why I thought I'd bring this to your attention over here, not because I'm a theologian or I'm a religious guy and I'm going to get you saved and you're going to go to heaven or something like that. I just want to point out here, the boss himself says, hey, listen, I'm getting tired of this and I'm going to... Now, do you remember I told you here about this rape, robbery, and assault in our public schools? I mentioned the last program. I said, hey, we got 17 big problems here in the United States in our public schools. It's rape, robbery, assault, burglary, arson, bombings, murder, suicide, absenteeism, vandalism, extortion, drug abuse, alcohol abuse, gang warfare, premarital pregnancy, abortion, and venereal disease. It comes from page 69 of a neat little book here called America, to Pray or Not to Pray, written by David Barton. Write it down. You'll love it. David Barton. Now, he pointed out here in his book, dealing with this thing of prayer in the public schools. Now, his thing is America, to Pray or Not to Pray. Now, they have abolished prayer. This is our Supreme Court. Now, they have abolished prayer in the public school. And we could probably get around, you know, get along without prayer, but we can't get along without God. We can't get along without the Ten Commandments, and we can't get along without the Bible in our public schools. The prayer thing over there, I mean, you know, you could probably shut up about that. It isn't helpful, but, you know, you probably could wiggle your way around that one. The other three, you're not going to wiggle around because that's the basis of morality. And that's where the hardware is. That's where the rubber meets the road. Anyway, this guy, David Barton, called Wall Builder Press. Phone number is 817-441-6044. Last time I bought one of these, it was $12, paperback, 100 and let's see how many pages here. About 160 pages in round numbers. They're at Post Office Box 397, Aledo, Texas, A-L-E-D-O. I haven't got a clue as to where Aledo, Texas is, but it's 76008. 76008 is the zip code, Post Office Box 397. Aledo, A-L-E-D-O, Texas. Phone number again, 817-441-6044. I'd call them for a copy of this book, America to Pray or Not to Pray. Another place you might get it, remember, is bravenewbookstore.com. Bravenewbookstore.com. They handle almost all of these kinds of books. If you got a book that you can't get anywhere else, you call Brave New Bookstore, and I'll bet you they'll get it for you. All right. Now, I'm about running out of time. Well, I got a couple of minutes here. Let me flip this book over here for a second. Let me see if I can find my own one. What did I do with it? Yeah, here we go. up here in the introduction, a guy by the name of William Bradford. William Bradford March. He was born in March 1590, died in 1657. Well, he was a leader of the Plymouth colony, sailing in the Mayflower. He was chosen as governor of the colony in 1621. He was reelected 30 times until his death. In 1650, William Bradford wrote a history of the Plymouth plantation, which is comparable to Shakespeare's works in literary and historical significance. In 1650, Governor William Bradford stated in a book called Of Plymouth Plantation, he said, "Though I am grown aged, yet I have had a longing desire to see with my own eyes something of the most ancient language, the holy tongue, in which the law and oracles of God were writ, and in which God and angels spoke to the holy patriarchs of old time, and what names were given to things from the creation. And though I cannot attain to much herein, yet I am refreshed to have seen some glimpse hereof, as Moses saw the land of Canaan afar off. My aim and desire is to see how the words and phrases lie in the holy text, and to discern somewhat of the same for my own content." All right, so I'm going to put a little mark right there. William Bradford. That's one of our founding fathers. A founding father. Remember this book now, The Ten Commandments and Their Influence on American Law, William J. Federer, F-E-D-E-R-E-R. Try this phone number, 1-888-USA-WORD. 1-888-USA-WORD. And see if you can get a copy of it. I don't know what the price is. Probably 10, 15 bucks, maybe more. But if it was 100, it'd be worth every penny. Hey, I'm out of time, so let me give you a final reminder here that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. And the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.